Hey there, and welcome to the latest episode of Mobile Wallet Marketing Made Easy, the podcast that helps you navigate the ever-changing landscape of mobile marketing. Hey there, and welcome to the 50th episode of Mobile Wallet Marketing Made Easy.
Woo,
50! I'm Kim Stewart.
And I'm Hazel Fruitman.
Today we are celebrating, and while we're celebrating, it's also going to be all about museums and mobile wallets today. That's right. We have made it to another milestone, Hazel.
Isn't that amazing? 50 episodes.
Really, seriously, it is pretty amazing.
It is something to celebrate.
Normally, we don't pay much attention to the episode count, but then when we noticed that it was our 50th episode, all of a sudden we're like, oh, wow, that's actually pretty cool. You may not realize this, but when we started, we were going to produce a new podcast every single week. And pretty quickly, that turned into, like, such a drag. So we stopped. We stopped for, like, 2 or 3 months a couple years ago. Didn't do any more podcasts. Nobody wanted to record them. Nobody wanted to edit them, et cetera, et cetera. And the kind of the takeaway from that, like we got ourselves back on a realistic schedule, which is every 2 weeks. I mean, anybody can do this every 2 weeks. And
right. We're
not doing hour-long podcasts. Most of ours are anywhere from, you know, like 15 minutes to maybe 25 minutes if it's a long one. So this isn't like a huge thing. But the funny part, it's kind of a metaphor. When we started out and we were doing so many that we just burned out really fast and we weren't getting anything out of it, is that's a great metaphor for how to not message customers, clients, students, etc., so that you burn them out on your message. So, today's episode, we're going to talk about one of our clients. It's a museum, and they have been using mobile wallets for a little while now. They also use iBeacons and geofencing, and they have perhaps managed to teach us a thing or two about some off-the-wall possibilities.
I believe they have.
Yeah, things you can use to really reach out and touch someone.
Okay. But before we move into the meat of the episode, let's step back for a moment and talk about mobile wallets. You may not even know what a mobile wallet is or how it could be used effectively to market or advertise. And you likely don't know how you would even go about getting something like that set up. So the bottom line, it's the cheapest way to use mobile to get your messages across rather than spending time and money. Or more time and more money.
That's and more time and more money.
Uh-huh. Building an app with getting a tiny fraction of people that would actually use and download it.
If you're lucky.
If you're lucky, yeah, absolutely. You can leverage the hard work that people like Apple Wallet and some third-party Android developers who make generic wallets have already done.
Well, yeah, so that means you're going to spend your time managing campaigns instead of IT staff, and you're going to spend your money on things that actually help you to grow your business. And maybe you're sitting here now and you're even more confused than ever. You have no idea what a mobile wallet is other than out maybe like Apple Pay or Android Pay or Samsung Pay, and you don't understand that a mobile wallet is actually one of the cheapest, most effective, easiest to set up and manage marketing tools that there is. And what we normally do at this point is Hazel's going to give you the 2-minute rundown on what a mobile wallet pass actually is, how it works, and what it can do. If you've heard it before, skip ahead for 2 minutes. If you're a new listener, this 2 minutes could literally change your life.
Go get a sandwich. So mobile wallet marketing is using technologies with Apple and Android right on your phone. It's a mobile wallet pass. These passes sit inside iPhone's Apple Wallet or in a third-party app in Android. And they do some amazing things, these technologies. So the front, let me go over it first. The front of a pass has your company name, your title. Today we're talking about museums, so Museum XYZ, we go in the front. On the back of it, we'll have links to call to action links. So phone number, an email, any map to where you're going. So we'd have an address on there, and in one tap we'd have a navigation link so you would never get lost to the museum. If museum has any podcasts that are going on, you don't know that, but
Video marketing, social media. Video marketing,
social media. All can be put in the back of a pass. So it's like a little hub of all your professional links and all your professional contact information.
All your action items.
Action items. Excellent, excellent. So that's basically what it is. We'll go further into what how museums use it today.
Super cool, Hayes. That's really a good way to put it. And it makes me think about another episode that we did. I think maybe it was 28. Was that mobile wallets versus mobile apps part 2?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, so if you're on the fence and you're not entirely sure whether you want to build a mobile app for your business, don't, or whether you want to use mobile wallet advertising for your business, seriously consider it. Go back and listen to 28. It's the second part of a mini series that we did that really details the differences between the two, everything from cost to reach to management to time management and so on and so forth. So
that's a good one.
It's got a specific, situation specific rundown of what use cases are good for mobile apps and which ones are better for mobile wallet passes.
So I'm moving back into the museum space. Let's get into that now. We aren't allowed to use the name of the museum in the podcast. We couldn't get them to approve that. Although they did agree that we could do a dissection of their implementation.
Yeah, I think the director was a little bit wary of a couple of other museums in their city that they directly compete with, finding out exactly how they're running their program. I mean, these guys did most of it on a shoestring budget, and they certainly do not want their direct competitors to copy them. Right. So if we use their name, it would surely get out Google or some newswire or something, because it is such an interesting case study, and then their secrets would not be safe with us any longer.
So that's true. So these guys have seen a big increase in a couple of key areas, gift shop merchandising being one of them, and time spent in specific exhibits being the other.
Right. So by transitioning to mobile and to iBeacons, it's made a tremendous difference in the responses that they're seeing from their exhibit attendees at the museum. And they're also learning how to funnel traffic between exhibits by using the mobile notifications to manage the traffic flow.
So and there's one drawback to using mobile wallet passes instead of a standalone app, but there are a ton of drawbacks to trying to get people to install and use an app that they don't want. It's also much deeper cheaper and cost effective to get people to install a mobile wallet pass.
Well, it gives them a sense of value because they're not paying to rent one of those little devices with the narration built into it. Though in some cases, depending upon how your cost structure and your revenue stream is set up, sometimes there is a little bit of a revenue loss when you don't rent out those little audio things.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the drawback, let's get that out of the way first.
So each individual mobile wallet pass can only have 10 iBeacons programmed to trigger a response. So if you've got an exhibit that has a lot of items in it, a lot of things to see, and you want to curate the exhibit, you need to think carefully about how to set this up.
Right. So the museum that we're talking about, they already had a Wi-Fi system in place that they use to monitor the traffic in the museum, but not to collect any sort of data. And what that Wi-Fi system is they give away free Wi-Fi to the attendees to the museum. In exchange, the attendees, obviously, they have to sign into the Wi-Fi to use it. And they didn't try to marry these two systems, but they have a lot better data analytics because of the parallel systems that they're running. They never could do this with the curated recording devices, but what actually happens with the Wi-Fi setup is it monitors where the phones are or the devices are in the building after they've logged in while they're still in range. So the museum has zones set up, and they work the Wi-Fi off of that, and they kind of set their passes up to mirror the Wi-Fi setup. So they create like a master pass for specific exhibits, so far so easy, yes. Then they use iBeacons, which are little tiny radio transmitters, to trigger the lock screen notifications for the master pass.
So the back of the pass of the MasterPass is a little mini hub that contains all the content for the exhibit, but all of it is divided into sections. So the first iBeacon that triggers a lock screen notification pushes the attendee to go to the back of the pass and to click the top link of the pass. Keep in mind that the museum provides the Wi-Fi for free to the guests, and as Kim mentioned, they want to get users to sign into it. Since they can track their progress and how much time they spend in a particular place in the Wi-Fi monitoring area, so in their zone. Again, they're not keeping any personalized data or even recognizing the users via the Wi-Fi. They're just watching the device that's logged in, making its way through the museum. And they can get stats on how much time a device remained in a certain location versus another one. So they'll know what exhibit is doing well, what people are interested in.
Right. So the link at the top of the pass simply flips on to a web page. And it's a responsive web page. So it's going to adapt to their device screen size. And it contains all of the curated bits for the exhibit. And it does it in the specific order that matches the layout of the exhibit. So, you know, when Joe Plummer comes into the first room of the exhibit and he clicks the link on the page from the back of the pass, there's a linear list of items, and they're expandable items that detail the various pieces in the exhibit. And this is all rendered in HTML5, so it is completely compatible with iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, Windows phone, tablets, whatever.
Right. So these guys were working with, they were working on a shoestring budget on this implementation, and they really spent some time working out how to get the most out of the 10 iBeacons per pass limit. They also didn't want to rely on geofencing, which is also 10 locations per pass, since the museum itself can often block location signals from proper transmission due to the construction and furnishings in the building. It's also really hard to narrow down a geofenced location in a very small space. It's not just designed to do that. It's more of a broad location.
Yeah, but don't forget that the museum decided to put a geofence trigger on the front door of their two most competitive facilities, and that they throw up the offer that says Museum XYZ is offering a 50% discount on museum membership today. And, you know, the funny part about that is, so here you are, you're Joe, you're now standing in front of Museum ABC, and up pops a lock screen notification from XYZ, and it gives you, based on what competitive museum you're standing in front of, a different offer code to redeem at the museum or online. So they're also able to track how many of the people go to another museum and end up joining their museum at a discount. Again, the shoestring budget, really smart in the way that they did the implementation.
Yeah, I mean, they were creative when they did this. They were relying on web pages to do the work for carrying the curation load. That left plenty of available triggers for other things. One big one that people apparently really appreciate is advance notice of where the restroom is. That this is not a closet in the exhibit.
The one that's closest to the exhibit.
Yeah. Again, with the Wi-Fi location tracking for signed-in devices, it wasn't hard to figure out that restroom usage pretty much doubled when people were told where to find them. So overall, time spent in an exhibit also went up. So perhaps not having a run around and find a toilet causes a person to spend more time looking at art. Who really knows?
Exactly. And we also have a point about 3/4 of the way through the exhibit where they decided to attempt to use a daisy chain feature on the pass. So that trigger sends a lock screen notification, and it offers the attendee the chance to download a second pass. And the way that they've done this, it's actually the bottom link on the back of the original pass, but the pass is long enough that it's pretty well hidden until somebody brings it to your attention. So they pop up the lock screen notification, and it says, get a 25% discount in the restaurant, the gift shop, et cetera, et cetera. Scroll down to the back of the pass, click the link. So when they click the link, it adds the second pass. They simply hit the accept, and off they go. So that's what they're doing in the location. So let's talk about for a minute what happens when they're buying a membership.
When they're buying a membership, yeah. Yeah. Those who are members of the museum are sent a link when they buy their membership to a different pass. This is a members-only pass, and they are instructed to install. This pass is a permanent membership pass that lives on their mobile phone and can be used to gain admittance to the museum. The same ticket scanner that works on paper tickets purchased at the box office or online is compatible with the barcode system on a mobile wallet pass. So this is a great way to keep the members separate from the non-members when it's time to do direct marketing to the installed passes. So the passes generally tend to stay in the phones for months, even years, after being installed, even if the user is no longer at the museum and the exhibit has long since been shuttered.
So our museum, as soon as one featured exhibit closes and they get another one ready to open, they have a policy where they send out lock screen notifications to all of the installed passes for a big new exhibit. But otherwise, if they have some of the smaller exhibits that are kind of more targeted demographics, they'll tailor a message based on the exhibit that the pass was originally installed in. So somebody who came in because they liked Impressionist art may not be sent a minor modern art notification. I mean, they would certainly, if there was like a Cy Twombly exhibit, everybody would get a notification of that. But they do this so that they can generate excitement and keep people who may not be reading emails or seeing ads or looking at the mailers they send out in the snail mail. They want to keep people in the loop, and the lock screen notification is a great way to do it.
That's right. And last but not least is the iBeacon triggers we mentioned before. We've got the restaurant and the gift shop and the membership office that actually trigger a notification when the user is in that specific location, which is not necessarily matched up like you would think. It turns out that when a user in the restroom area inside the exhibit, they don't care about the gift shop passes, but they do click through and check out the restaurant menu. It's weird, but that's what the data says.
Hey, we're not judging anybody here. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's super weird. If you send somebody a link to the restaurant menu while they're in the toilet, they will look at the restaurant menu while they're in the toilet. It's crazy. I've never heard anything like it.
So we just like added like, I don't know how many people.
You know, who cares? So the museum sets up the pass segregation well in advance of the exhibit. So, and they've gotten super good at figuring out how, again, on the shoestring budget, to make all of this stuff work with what's available. So they avoid having to create an app. They don't have to spend the money. They don't have to support the app. They're able to split up the groups by exhibit, by date of attendance, or perhaps even by the type of ticket or the price of the ticket. When we're doing their mobile tickets for events, especially when it's like, you know, some of them have like nighttime events and stuff like that, social events, there's a lot of stuff that can be done at the segregation point there and in grouping these into logical target demographics so that you can constantly update them. You can change up the content, reuse it for like new content, educational materials, or offers, or you know, stuff like that.
Yes, so that's a great way that museums are using mobile wallet passes. And looks like,
oh my God,
we're out of time.
I thought we were going to get to spend more time talking about how we got to 50 episodes and all those trials and tribulations. And, you know, I mean, really, if you don't produce a podcast, have you ever stopped to think about how do you decide what topic when, like in our case, we have a plethora of possibilities and it's all good stuff. But how do you make these decisions?
Right. Well, yeah, my games are getting a little nostalgic over past
that. I think, so, you know, maybe we'll just have to do a nostalgia episode in the next couple months. And maybe we'll just spend the whole thing talking about all of our previous episodes and create, you know, like an episode about the episodes, like a curated guide or something like that.
Right. Like when shows like, you know, like how TV shows, it's like
we're not doing flashbacks. We're not doing flashbacks. Heck no.
Anyway, thank you for listening to our 50th episode. Woohoo!
And with that, we are out of here. See you again in 2 weeks.